saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table. So young, so sweet.
I did not name my microphone Audacity. No. Hi everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Potheads, the podcast that's bumping the night. I am your host, Janine Mercer, and I am joined here, as always, by
the wonderful and fabulous Katie McCauley.
You still kind of sound full of yourself when you say that.
Well, I'm kind of saying, like, you're supposed to, you know, like, validate yourself. Like, it's a positive affirmation.
I see.
So if I say that I'm wonderful and fabulous enough, then I will be. So you speak it into the universe.
You already are. You already got there. So we have had a little bit of time off.
Yes.
There was some illness stuff with a pank that was a hoe.
Yeah.
And there was some me going to Colorado stuff. To my hippy-dippy college.
Yeah, and your pank was not a hoe.
My pank was not a hoe, no.
Yeah, only organs that work correctly deserve their full name.
Deserve the full name, exactly, yes.
So it's not a pancreas.
Uh-huh.
It is a pank.
It is a pank, yes. Yeah. And it is a hoe.
It is such a hoe.
It's such a hoe, yeah.
Yeah, have we... Is everyone confused, or have we mentioned that I have a disease of the pancreas before?
I don't think.
Really confused right now.
Yeah, I don't think that we have ever spoken of your pancreatic affliction.
Well, I think basically my pancreas, when your body is like, hey, can we do the thing? My pancreas is like, but what if we don't? What if instead... No.
Cool.
Yeah. So there. Now everyone.
Uh-huh.
No, so then that's why it's a pain.
Yeah.
And it's a hoe.
And it's a hoe. Yep. Yeah.
And when it's a hoe, I cannot drive places and record things. I lay.
Right.
And I eat crackers and drink watered down lemon lime Gatorade.
Mm-hmm.
Because what more can one want out
that's,
of life?
That's where you were.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's at that point. Yeah. So there was that. And then there was some slipping and falling on ice.
So help me, if I fall on black ice one more time this winter, I'm just laying on the ground, and that's going to be my home now.
I just think that you need to stop putting on the shittiest ice capades in history over and over and over again.
Well, I have to
It's not working.
Somehow,
well, I mean, I guess, but...
How are they going to get less shitty if I'm not constantly, like, gliding across the ice attempting to improve?
Well, that's true, I guess.
Yeah, well, this last time, though, yeah, when I fell, I did kind of just lay there for a bit. I was just like... Well, okay.
This is my life now.
This is who I am. This is just who I am.
Lady lying on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah. Then I got cold, so.
Yeah, right.
Got up.
Yeah, no. I had this whole weekend in Colorado to write, and it was fine. But they kind of have this thing at Naropa where they want to sit on the floor all the time.
Why?
It's because it's a meditative pose and they're hippy-dippy, so that's like whatever. And so everybody's like, come on, Janine, come on, sit down on the floor, let's align our chakras, come on, Janine, sit down on the floor. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but if I get down on the floor, no amount of fucking good intention is gonna get me up off the floor.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna sit in a chair.
Yeah, I was in a class at
Chakras be damned.
Once, and it wasn't what I would call the most knowledge gaining courses, because I think sometimes the teacher wasn't like fully there, and he'd just be like, okay, for class today, we're going to meditate, and he'd put on music, and then he'd walk out.
Oh, we just leave?
Yeah. And all of us would just be like sitting, like listening to this music. He normally came back and like 15-20 minutes, so we just sat, and everyone would sit on the floor, and some people would like lie on the floor, and I was like, I'm gonna not do that. I'm gonna stay in my chair.
I mean, that's just gross. Like, they wanted us to like sit just like on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm sorry, I've seen too many hippy-dippy people walk across this carpeting in bare feet. I can't do that.
Yeah. Oh, one time, it was in that same classroom, which is another reason I did not sit on that floor. I looked down, and I saw that someone had a whole bunch of fingernail clippings on the floor right next to my chair. And I was like, that is logged away in my brain.
That is gross.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and then you had your whole thing, like, with the handprint.
Oh, yeah. So, I've written on the blog before about some of the experiences that I've had with the paranormal or with the spirit world or whatever it is you want to call them. But this time was especially haunting because I stayed at this little motel. It's called the Foot of the Mountain Motel in Boulder, Colorado. And it's literally, like, at the foot of a mountain.
Good, because otherwise that'd be false advertising.
It would be false advertising,
and
yes.
I'm not okay with false
I know.
Advertising.
I'm not down with that shit either. So accurate advertising, it was indeed at the foot of a mountain.
Good.
So I'm sitting in my room that's about the size of a closet.
Of course.
It was, with the bathroom included, it was about the size of this room. So, I mean, not with, yeah. with like a... I don't think it was a queen bed. I think it was a double bed.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, put a double bed in here.
And then that's the room.
And then that's it. Yeah. This room was apparently a carport prior to being an actual room. Essentially, in the 1930s, this place was built. They designed it so that it could be like one of those motor inns so that you had an actual little place to park your car. And
okay.
Apparently it was like a big draw. People really liked that. It was homey. Whatever.
Great.
So now, the room that is next to your room generally was a carport. So, like...
Every other room.
So, like, number 7 has always been an actual room, but number 8, which is what I was in, was originally a carport. And it kind of looked like a carport. Honestly, with a double bed in it. I went to bed at... probably around 11:30 at night because I tried to put off going to sleep because the bed was like a pallet of bricks with a comforter on it.
Very nice.
So I was not looking forward to going to bed. So it was like 11 or 11:30 or something, and I finally decided to go to bed. So, you know, my nightly routine is go to the bathroom, take care of everything you gotta take care of, go to bed.
Yes.
I go into the bathroom and I'm taking care of my nightly routine, whatever, and I adjust the bath mat because it keeps getting hitched up on the bottom of the door.
Well, because I'm sure the bathroom was giant.
So oh my god, it was so big! Yeah, I was like, oh my god, I should totally sleep in here standing up in the shower because it's so much bigger than my room. And actually, it probably would have been more comfortable to stand up like a fucking horse. So, the bathroom was basically like a toilet and a sink and a shower in as close proximity as they could possibly get in this
yes.
tiny little space. So this bath mat, which is kind of like purple and like plushy kind of,
mm-hmm.
it's when you walked into the room, it was lengthwise.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was lengthwise, the door would always catch up on it.
Yeah.
So I took it and moved it a little bit to the left so that it would be closer to the shower.
That's where you fucked up. You moved the bath mat.
I moved the fucking bath mat. So I put it over closer to the shower because I thought, well, then it's not going to get hooked up on the door.
And you normally need the bath mat when you get out
out of the bath. So I was like, it's not decorative. Like, it has a purpose. So I put it over by the shower and then... You know, and I'm adjusting it. So I'm paying attention to what is going on around me at that present time.
Yes.
Saw nothing out of the ordinary when I adjusted the bath mat.
Mm-hmm.
Went to bed. So it's like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and the bed is terrible, and I have been up and down and up and down and up and down all night. And the entire time that I'm in this room, I have like, I have like pressure on my chest.
Mm-hmm.
There's like cold air blowing in my face, and I don't know where the fuck it's coming from. It's just weird. Mm-hmm. The entire situation is just fucking weird. So I get up at like 4:30 in the morning to go to the bathroom. And I'm sitting on the can, and I look down, and there's a fucking handprint on the bath mat. And I'm like, okay, I just adjusted it. I didn't, like, lean over. I'm not crouching tight. What is it? Crouching tiger, hidden dragon? None of that shit. Like, I can't bend over that far to physically do that because yeah. I have a back injury. So, like, you know, I just barely moved it. Just barely adjusted it. And you know, whatever. Fucker. So, anyway. The bath mat has a handprint on it. And not only does it have a handprint on it, but it's also been turned so that it's right in front of the shower. So it went from being lengthwise to being widthwise on the floor. I have no explanation for this. I posted it on one of my paranormal groups, and now they either think that the room was severely haunted or there is somebody living in the wall. I don't...
Somebody who cannot handle a bath mat that is askew.
Something didn't like it that I moved the bath mat. So they were like, I'm going to fucking fix it. But I went to sleep and didn't go to the bathroom again, didn't touch anything in there until like 4:30 in the morning. And there's this fucking handprint. And it's like, it was bigger than my handprint.
Yeah, it was giant. You sent me a picture.
Yeah, it was bigger than my handprint. And I have like...
How big are your hands?
Well, I have like very small, dainty.
You do. I have very dainty hands.
Yeah, I have very dainty hands. So, I mean, I don't have any explanation for it. I then sent a message to Katie and was like, hey, so this is what's going on. And she was like, send me pictures. And so I did. And then you didn't like it.
Yeah, I didn't. I did not like the room's energy. Yeah. I was just like, no, I'm not a fan. 0 out of 5 stars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it didn't help that the, you know, carpet was threadbare and it was fucking paneling.
Yeah, paneling's never a great, like, doesn't add positive energy.
This is my disclaimer. Paneling is not a good aesthetic choice. Do not choose paneling. Never choose paneling. Even if paneling is the cheapest.
Don't have walls.
Like, hang up a curtain as opposed to putting up paneling.
Newspaper.
Right? Newspaper. Newspaper that has been sodden with fucking Elmer's glue and water over just fucking studs. Do not put up paneling. So anyway. That was my story.
Yeah, and I made you cleanse the room and then swish your mouth out.
And I asked the guy that worked at the desk whether or not he had had any experiences or had heard of anybody having any experiences, and he said no, he hadn't heard anything.
Yeah.
I Googled the place. There's nothing.
Maybe someone was just living in the walls.
I mean, I don't know how the fuck they got in there because all of the ceilings were solid. And all of the pictures were drilled, like, screwed onto the wall.
People probably wanted to steal them, and they were just being...
I mean...
I'm sure it was great art.
It was probably the case that they had a room in the motel where they had 12 incarnations of the same fucking picture in case one of them walked away. So that then they could just go into the room and be like... Oh, we need another pristine mountainscape. Dink. And there you go. I'm sure that was probably... I mean, they do that at some of the, like, La Quinta and Motel 6s. They have just collections of the same picture. Because every room has to be the same.
Well, I just felt like that story needed to be told.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we still have no explanations. Other than...
Don't move the fucking bath mat.
Don't move the bath mat.
Piss off the lady in the walls.
Leave the bath mat alone. Do not touch it. So, as far as news is concerned, there's not really a whole lot. Just that there was illness and...
Banks are hoes.
Banks are hoes. And there was much extra shit that we had to do, so...
Yeah.
But now we're back.
Back in black.
I don't remember who went first last time. I feel like it was you.
I think it was me.
But I don't remember.
I think because whenever I go first and then I hear whatever you have to say, I'm normally left with a sense of like, oh my God. Because you have such like creepy things, like the guy with the who fucking like eats everything.
And oh, Terror?
Like, yeah. Mm. And so I remember that sense of disquiet in my abdomen after our last time. To be fair, it could have been my pank being a hoe.
It could have been.
But I feel like I sat and listened at the end last time. So I think it is your turn to go first.
All right. Well,
what you got?
I have the tale of the creation of the glass harmonica, not the harmonica, because the harmonica although sometimes people do call it a harmonica. you know, harmonicas are little tiny things that you blow into.
Yes.
An harmonica is quite larger, and it's bowls that spin on kind of a post.
My great-grandfather played the harmonica.
Oh, was he any good?
Yes.
Nice.
Quite good. He was going to teach me, and then he died.
Oh, yeah.
So.
That'd put a crimp in your plans, for sure.
Put a damper on things.
Yeah, right. Yeah, my grandfather used to play the harmonica, too, but not super well.
Oh, he was never. It's actually one of the few things I remember out of him. You know, like, those candy, like, peanuts that are kind of, like, made of foamy?
Oh, circus peanuts.
Yes.
Yeah.
He always gave us that, and he played the harmonica. That's all I remember about him, because I was, I'd say, 6 or 7 when he died.
Wow.
So I remember...
I think I would have much rathered a grandfather who gave me something chocolate and played the electric guitar as opposed to gave me fucking circus peanuts.
But played the harmonica.
I mean, playing the harmonica is definitely a skill.
Yeah, and they had no toys at the house. All they had was a set of, like, dominoes.
Oh.
So that's what you played with. And we came up with a lot of ways to play with
fun.
It.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
All right.
Harmonicas.
Harmonicas.
Fill me in. Tell me a tale.
The year is 1772, and it's a year of firsts and new ideas.
Ooh.
On the first of the year, the first traveler's checks go on sale in London and can be used in 90 European cities.
Awesome.
On May 11th, the Amsterdam Theater is destroyed by fire, killing 18 people. Less
not
awesome.
As fun.
On June 22nd, the court case of Somerset versus Stuart finds slavery unsupported by English common law, encouraging the abolitionist movement.
Woo woo!
In August, an explosive eruption kills 3,000 people in Indonesia.
Okay!
I mean, I'm just putting it in perspective here. On September 26th, New Jersey passes a bill requiring a license to practice medicine.
Very needed.
Incredibly needed. And on October 30th, Captain James Cook arrives on the ship Resolution in Cape Town, South Africa. So, while all these firsts and new ideas were occurring, Benjamin Franklin was entertaining at dinner parties, playing wine glasses filled with water to the glee of his guests. And yes, I do mean that, Benjamin Franklin. I mean, he did other shit besides play the wine glasses. He was Benjamin Franklin, for Christ's sakes.
Oh, Benny boy.
Benny boy. But the end result of this impromptu performance was the creation of a very unique and certainly very odd musical instrument called the harmonica. And no, I did not just drop the H, as is sometimes the custom in my culture. No, the harmonica is played with the mouth by forcing air through it. The harmonica is played with the fingertips. So they keep like a little bowl of water.
Mm-hmm.
Next to the harmonica, and you dampen, you get it on your fingertips.
And then
you slide your fingertips along the edges of glass bowls that are rotating on this spindle.
Interesting.
So it was also called a glass spindle, the glass harp, and the angelic organ. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
The instrument allowed the musician to play up to 10 notes simultaneously, making for a very interesting sound quality that is really practically ghostly.
Ooh.
It's very strange. Now, Wikipedia describes the harmonica as an instrument consisting of variously sized and tuned glass bowls that rotate on a common shaft played by touching... Yes, I said shaft. played by touching spinning glass with wet fingers. I think that whoever wrote that wiki really needs to get laid. Because, wow. Along with the angelic organ. Franklin's harmonica, which he didn't patent, by the way, because he believed that the instrument should be available to as many people as possible. And he didn't care about the revenue, because he was fucking Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, he had other shit to do.
This harmonica was played by famous people. Beethoven wrote music for the harmonica, and even French Queen Marie Antoinette lost her head over her harmonica lessons. Wah wah. Before, you know, she actually lost her head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I feel like maybe I shouldn't have laughed that heartily about someone getting their head chopped off.
This is, for anybody who's just tuning in, this is that kind of podcast. And if you don't like it, back off.
Yeah, it does not.
Because it's not going to get any better than that. No, it's not going to improve. Thousands of the instruments were built and sold by various dealers, and the popularity skyrocketed. However, the harmonica's melodies led to some confusing side effects, and it wasn't long before it began to serve an altogether different purpose. Yeah. So, I feel like at this point in time, I should let you guys hear a little bit of what the harmonica has to offer.
I'm excited. I actually did not listen to it in preparation to hear you, like, this time. I was like, I'm going to go in with no information about this. Beyond, you know, like, a miscongeniality when she does...
That's my computer. I turn off the sound because it makes bing-bong noises. That is the glass harmonica. Very interesting and very strange.
Ethereal, definitely.
Definitely ethereal. And it really makes you think hard about some of these other issues that come with listening to this instrument for long periods of time, which is what we're going to get into right now.
I am ready.
Think back to the past episode of Hauntheads where I talked about mesmerism. Franz Friedrich Anton Mesmer, a German doctor with an interest in astronomy, theorized that there was an energy transference that occurred between all animated and inanimate objects, and he called this animal magnetism, later referred to as mesmerism. Now, Mesmer himself would use the harmonica to channel the energies that he referred to as animal magnetism. I believe the episode was Season 2, Episode 3. And if you haven't had a listen, Mesmer essentially created all manner of wonky devices to channel this quote-unquote natural energy, and he marketed it as a cure-all to his patients. The harmonica also became a cure-all, but not because Franklin marketed the instrument as such. Rather, those listening decided that they felt better after the show was over. Mel Spencer of the Royal Opera House writes, Princess Isabella Saraitska of Poland, who met Franklin and his harmonica in 1772, wrote an account, quote, I was ill in a state of melancholia and writing my testament and farewell letters. Franklin opened an harmonica, sat down, and played long. The music made a strong impression on me, and tears began flowing from my eyes. Then Franklin sat by my side and, looking with compassion, said, Madam, you are cured. Indeed, at that moment, I was cured of my melancholia.
So you're telling me I don't have to be on Prozac.
No.
I could just listen to this music.
If you're unhappy, sit for hours on end and listen to this ear-bleeding fucking instrument. And you, like, after you listen to it for a while, you get a ringing in your ears.
Oh, so the ring
doesn't
go
away.
You don't have any thoughts.
You can't. It's like you can't focus on any one sound anymore. It all just comes together as a ringing. And I don't know if it's my tinnitus or if it's the harmonica at that point. In 1762, Franklin premiered a new version of his angelic organ. Insert eye roll here. The new model featured a color coding system to tell the musician which note they were actually playing, which is insanely useful. And it eliminated the trough of water that the glasses would rotate through, the bowls would rotate through. Now, this version of the AO was played by Marianne Davies to tremendous applause. She was a very popular musician of the time. On January 12th of that year, the Bristol Journal advertised the event as the celebrated glassy chord invented by Mr. Franklin of Philadelphia, who has greatly improved the musical glasses and formed them into a complete instrument to accompany the voice, capable of a thorough bass and never out of tune. Miss Davies from London was to perform in the month of January several favorite airs, English, Scotch, and Italian, on the glassy chord, being the only one of the kind that has ever been produced, accompanied occasionally with the voice and the German flute. Of course, as is the case with many a strange and unusual elixir, regular players began reporting that their tinnitus was cured. Likely because the harmonica sounds like the Hunchback of Notre Dame is having a stroke while swinging from the bell ropes in the tower. Other musicians said that they felt disoriented, and more still said that they were struck with bouts of madness with regularity upon playing the instrument.
I feel like any instrument you play a lot, you're gonna go a little crazy.
I mean, the sound that thing makes, yeah, it rings in your head.
I can only imagine being like right next to it. Yeah, how piercing that would be.
I mean, this guy, I just played part of the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy on the glass harmonica, and this gentleman by the name of William Zeitler, he dresses up like Benjamin Franklin and plays the harmonica for people. And
that is career goal.
Right? I know. Yeah. So there's lots of videos on YouTube of Zeitler playing the glass harmonica. And he's very good. He does a lovely job. It's just a terrible instrument, in my opinion. I don't think it has anything to do with his abilities as a musician. So once the public heard about these various afflictions, ignoring the one dude that was cured of his tinnitus.
Yeah, we're just gonna tinnitus.
We're just gonna push that under the rug, yeah. The harmonica was credited with being a menace. Health warnings read, if you're suffering from any kind of nervous disorder, you should not play it. If you are not yet ill, you should not play it. If you are feeling melancholy, you should not play it.
Damn.
And this is thanks to German musicologist Friedrich Rochlitz. It was likely Davis's poor health that earned the harmonica its reputation. In 1783, she wrote to Ben Franklin regarding her illness, stating that she had a, quote, violent return of nervous complaints, which brought me so low that there were little hopes of my recovery.
Aww.
I was near a 12th month coffined in my room, or, well, I guess it's coffined. Coffined in my room.
Coffined.
It's apostrophe D, so I think it's coffined. To my room. And most part of the time, to my bed.
I mean, damn.
Yeah. Davis never attributed her illness to playing the harmonica. She and her sister had made a business of touring with the instrument and playing to large crowds. But there were some who linked her playing to her eventual death in a mental institution. So
happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I never said this was a happy story. I never said that. I said it sounded like the Hunchback of Notre Dame was having a stroke. I put that out there.
You did.
It was just the one dude with tinnitus who's like, it's great. And yeah, everybody else is like, oh my God. Even though the reports of insanity and hysteria were widespread, and those who experienced the harmonica's beguiling tune were indecisive as to whether or not the thing might cause you to throw yourself from a bell tower, the instrument found a home at the opera. Because, you see, the opera was mad in itself, and although it was difficult to find someone who could actually play the instrument, the multiple mad scenes and general fanciful quality of operatic performance made it a perfect fit.
I could see that.
I don't really like the opera either. But, I mean, I think it's quite mad, which...
Oh, yes.
I mean, yeah.
The harmonica would fit right in.
Yes, it was like, and we will come here with all of our mad people and harmonica, plunk. And it just, they all got along. It was great. Now, still, people were going Wiggy over the harmonica, not in a good way. They feared it would induce madness and hysteria in anyone at all that listened to a performance, and rumors of people dying during concerts eventually led to certain German cities banning the instrument altogether.
Hot damn.
You just imagine going through, like, a checkpoint or something on the road, and they're like, do you have any guns or knives or anything? No. Do you have an harmonica? Yes. Get the fuck out.
Leave now.
Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. I don't know if that's a good German accent. Probably not. And now we just lost all of our German listeners. Whatever. Okay. Again, if you think that this is going to get better, get the fuck out. Okay. So it's a menace. So Germany bans it altogether. It scared animals, which makes sense because it's all that ringing. And apparently it caused babies to be born prematurely. Like, people who were pregnant went to listen to harmonica performances like, and had their youngsters there on the floor. Okay.
That is an interesting side effect of a musical instrument.
I mean, apparently roller coasters and the glass harmonica, that's...
Yeah.
Two things that can cause a baby to be born prematurely. And cheese? Is that a thing, too? You're not supposed to have cheese? Soft cheese?
Does that make
babies born premature? I don't know anything about it. Everybody's, like, screaming, that's not a thing! Sorry.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I don't fucking know. I'm just guessing. Please don't email me. I'm just guessing. I don't know. There's a lot of things, anyway, that can make babies...
I'm Googling if soft cheese makes babies get born early.
I think it's not good. I mean, I think it's not good, right? I mean, it's a bad thing, right? Isn't it supposed to be, like, they stay away from... I feel like this episode is devolving into... devolving more so.
It can contain a bacteria that can cause an infection. So they're not supposed to eat uncooked, mold-ripened soft cheese, such as brie and other soft cheeses made with goat's milk.
But can it cause premature birth?
It's not telling me that.
Okay, so I'm wrong.
Yeah.
We'll just say that I'm wrong, and we'll be fine with that. I'm not going to lose any sleep tonight knowing that I'm wrong. Because I am wrong a lot. So it's fine. It's just fine.
No, so, castor oil induces labor. Cheese does not.
Oh, okay.
According to the Google.
All right. So castor oil and roller coasters and the glass harmonica. Those are three things that, yeah. Okay. So clearly... the glass harmonica was a menace that had to be stopped.
Yes.
Many also worried about the harmonica's ability to raise the spirits of the dead. Because even though the 18th century was one of scientific enlightenment, there were many people who relied on superstition and rumor to get through their day.
I was about to say, like, how bored do you have to be to come up with all these things about, like, a fucking instrument?
I mean...
is there to make people have babies?
What else was there to do? I mean, they probably had dominoes.
The circus penis.
So, probably not circus penis, no. Circus peanuts, maybe. But not, there's no phallus in that. Oh, here we go. Here we go, and we're gone. I feel like this episode has just been a bit of a struggle bus. Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. All right.
I'm trying.
So, I mean, okay. So can you picture somebody in a graveyard playing this thing and raising the dead? Because I absolutely can't.
I mean, I feel like there's more effective ways to go about attempting to raise the dead than playing an harmonica.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about Resurrection Men. A shovel and
yeah.
A little bit of enthusiasm?
Yeah.
You could raise anybody you want. It's fantastic. All right.
But
the rule of thumb here is never use the harmonica after midnight, and for the love of Christ, stay away from graveyards.
Yes.
Yes.
That's our takeaway.
Don't give the Mogwai water. Don't feed it after midnight. Keep the harmonica away from graveyards. Now,
don't buy mirrors secondhand.
Don't buy mirrors secondhand. That's
my,
ever.
Yeah, that's my.
Don't do decision. It.
Just don't.
Don't.
Don't
do
buy
it.
An antique mirror. Just don't do that to yourself.
Just don't do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't do it. Now, after all of this, this is not to say that the harmonica didn't have its fans, because.
I mean, necromancers, I'm sure, were like,
I mean,
yeah.
They were like, woohoo! Mozart and Jefferson, Paganini, all used the harmonica and swore by its tonality and the word that you used, ethereal quality. It added to their work. Of course, there were also legitimate critics. See, this is better than Prozac. Apparently laughing is very good for you.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is.
I'm going to stay on the Prozac.
You're
going to... I'm going to stay
You're
on
gonna
it.
Stick with the Prozac?
Yeah,
you're not
I'm going to keep that too.
But I'm saying that soft cheese and castor oil and roller coasters will make babies be born, and that laughing on a podcast will make you not have to use your Prozac anymore.
I mean, that would be great.
Be
we
fantastic.
Could podcast like every day.
Right, there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. J.M. Rogers stated in his Treatise on the Effects of Music on the Human Body, "Its melancholy tone plunges you into dejection to a point the strongest man could not hear it for an hour without fainting." Even Thomas Bloch, a musician who played the harmonica regularly, said that the sounds created, quote, are of a nearly celestial softness but can cause spasms.
Ooh.
That doesn't surprise me at all, because after a while, you know, I listened to that Sugar Plum Fairy piece,
mm-hmm.
is like 4 minutes long. And at the end, when they stop playing the harmonica...
You still kind of hear it?
You can still hear it. And you can still hear it pretty clearly. Like, it really resonates inside your head. I don't know if that is a thing or not, but it was a thing for me, so... As someone who has listened to several of these musical interludes, I can say that hearing the strange sound of the harmonica does cause me to feel a little lightheaded, and it did scare the shit out of the cat. I think it's also important to note that, as Bloch later points out, there was on average 40% lead content in some of the glass of the time period, although absorption of lead through the skin is limited to less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Since Franklin updated his design, perhaps a bowl of water just wasn't handy, and the musician licked his
fingers.
Or her fingers
that's
between
what,
each
that's
one.
That's immediately where my brain went.
Right.
It's like they probably were licking their fingers.
And then, so I looked that up, and apparently you can't generate enough saliva to lubricate that many glasses spinning at once. So, I don't know. And also, the glasses were painted on the inside to avoid the paint wearing off.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that paint likely contained lead.
Yeah.
That was probably a thing. But absorption or ingestion isn't an outlandish thought. For example, women in the 17th and 18th centuries were poisoning themselves with lead-based makeup. Maria Gunning, who died at the age of 27, was regularly exposed to lead-based cosmetics in that time period. You also have to consider the fact that in the 18th century, Victorian women were very much into this sheal green color.
Yeah.
I also wrote a piece for Hauntheads about women in the 18th century in England. And I talked a little bit about some of the customs. And the sheal green wallpaper came into just exploding popularity. And everybody had it in their homes, but the downside of it was if it got wet and it got moldy, then the mold spores then had arsenic in them. Boutonnieres that, you know, the women would wear, they'd put it in their hat, and it'd be dusted with this sheal green powder. And it had a high content of arsenic, and they were just frequently being exposed to it. Actually, a woman who worked in a factory in that time period passed away from arsenic poisoning, and when they cut her body open, she was green on the inside.
Ooh.
I mean, like, it permeated The tips of her fingers were green. The insides of her mouth were green. Her eyes, the whites of her eyes were green. It was really quite something. So, I mean, it wouldn't be so outlandish to say that maybe there was some lead exposure. According to GlassArmonica.com, Maria Gunning continued to utilize heavy makeup simply because it was stylish. Had she paid heed to her husband's actions against her wearing lead-based makeup in Paris for the rest of her days, her death 8 years later at the age of 27 may not have been so untimely. However, throughout the 17th and 18th centuries, it was fashionable for ladies to have pale white skin and red rouge cheeks and use lead as a basis for their makeup. It was the noxious effect of lead which caused skin eruptions, which also encouraged ladies to powder their skin more vigorously to mask the blemishes, and eventually blood poisoning, which killed Maria on September 30th, 1760.
That's so sad.
It was just the times.
Yep.
You know. Originally known as simply as a beautiful but vain woman, she eventually became known in society circles as a victim of cosmetics. It also wasn't customary to bathe on the regular, and many wealthy people only bathed once a month. Washing your hands wasn't in fashion. Keep lead on your skin for 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, year after year, along with lead powder that would constantly be falling off of your face to be inhaled and ingested, and you have a surefire recipe for lead poisoning.
Yeah, boy.
So this website goes on to list a number of ways the people in the 17th century might have poisoned themselves.
Basically, you just were going to fucking die from lead poisoning or
basically,
influenza.
Basically, right? Or consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or melancholy.
Yes.
Or hysteria.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're just going to die.
You're just going to die. Yeah, you're going to die.
The lead, if like all the other shit doesn't get you, the lead will.
Right. So, despite all of the above information, it's doubtful that harmonica players died from playing the harmonica. It's more likely that they died from the same illnesses as everybody else.
Yeah.
Or, you know, from the dust shed by their arsenic-laced wallpaper, or bread dough made Whitey McWhite White by plaster of Paris. Who can say? Of course, for everything, there is a season. And the harmonica quickly fell out of favor. It was popular in America and England for about 100 or so years, but I guess it just wasn't fashionable to talk to the dead any longer. Plus, you know, superstition. Damn it, Jimmy, I thought I told you to keep that bloody harmonica out of the graveyard. Just wait till your father gets home. So the bottom line is, harmonicas were a pain in the arse to ship. They were basically entirely made out of glass and incredibly fragile. And even water quality would negatively affect the quality of the notes it produced. It was also quite difficult to play. The instrument didn't do well in a symphony orchestra because there was no amplification at the time, so it just got lost amongst all the other instruments. Interestingly enough, there are still a handful of people today who play due to a gentleman from Massachusetts by the name of Finkenbeiner, a glass blower who began making them again. Now, at this point, is anyone else looking to purchase one of these things?
I'm at least going to Google it. How much do they cost?
I'm not going to lie. I've been Googling. But it looks like Finkenbeiner isn't as Franklin-like in ensuring the continuation of the playing and the enjoyment of harmonicas.
Aw, come on, Fink.
His start at right around $7,800.
Holy shit!
And each bowl is made of pulverized quartz. Apparently, the smaller models are about 35 pounds, while the larger models can top 50 pounds. He also creates anatomical models of various parts of the human body in glass, if you're in need of that sort of thing.
How did you know? I thought I did that.
I just knew. So, I'm curious if anybody out there has ever witnessed a live performance of the glass harmonica. And
Did
you weep? You know, did the glass harmonica tomfoolery make you go wacky in your head box? I want to know. I want to hear about it.
Yes.
So that is the fascinating and often terrible tale of the glass harmonica.
That was definitely informative. I appreciate it. I want to Google it. I want to see what like it looked like. But that's fucking expensive.
It's very, I mean, if you think about it, okay, he's making all of these bowls by hand.
Yeah.
He's constructing this thing. He's blowing all of these bowls. You know, I mean, it's...
He's blowing them?
He's blowing the bowls. Well, he's a glass blower. That's what they do. They blow glass. Uh-huh. Yeah. What you got, dude? Moving along with your dirty fucking mind.
Okay, well, I am keeping it a little local, and I was going to talk about the Ridgeway Ghost. Mm. Or the Ridgeway Phantom. You can find information under both titles. It's a Wisconsin legend.
Cool.
Okay. The really cool thing, when I was starting to... I wanted to do something that was Wisconsin-based, so I was at the library, and I found this book of a whole bunch of different Wisconsin lore, and I wanted something that I could then translate and find online, because I am a child of the internet. And I love to read actual books, but like for research, I prefer online. So I looked at a couple of the different stories. Some of them, I felt they were just too vague.
Yeah.
And then I was looking at the Ridgeway Ghost, and I found, it's actually what I'm going to end with, is a New York Times article published in December of 1902.
Cool.
That details this. So we're going to go into just some basic information. It's a bit shorter than per usual, but I felt like it needed to be discussed.
Oh, yeah.
And then I will end with this article, which, and I think it's really cool. I'm just going to read it verbatim because is just... I love the way that people form sentences back then and just the eloquence and everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot to be said for being coffined in your room.
Route 151 winds through Wisconsin's best known ghost country. It does. I actually looked it up on a map. It goes all loop-de-loop all around through a lot of things.
Cool.
It goes from Dodgeville to Blue, Wisconsin, and it's actually extremely famous for hauntings. There have been several hundred tales just along Route 151, and a lot of them were of the Ridgeway Ghost.
Hmm.
Many local residents gave accounts between 1840 and 1900, and the sightings of this ghost have declined. Sightings of this ghost have declined over the decades. But claims of mysterious manifestations, like the most recent one, was 1993.
Mm.
According to the legend, the Ridgeway Ghost is not only a ghost, but a phantom that could change its appearance at will. Anecdotes include people claiming to have seen the ghost of a man with a whip, walking with them or chasing them, domestic animals such as dogs, sheep, or other farm animals, and various human forms. So, he just apparently... Like, whatever he's fucking feeling in the moment, that's what you're going to see.
Right,
like, today, what am I today? Today, I am a sheep. And then that's what you get.
I mean, do whatever makes your heart sing.
Hey! Uh-huh. You're going to keep on using that phrase. I know you started ironically, but
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
There's one that I'm going to leave you guys with that, you and your wife. Like, do what makes your heart sing.
Do what makes your heart sing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, the folklore holds that the ghost is a combination of two brothers who had the misfortune to be murdered as a result of a bar brawl somewhere in the early 1840s. Mm. And it was sighted anywhere from the village of Blue Mounds to the town of Dodgeville in Iowa County, Wisconsin, which is a 25-mile stretch of road. Sightings of this ghost supposedly escalate in cycles about every 40 years, starting in the 1850s. And occurring more frequently again in the 90s, the 30s, and the 70s.
Every 40 years? Like clockwork?
I don't know.
Or, oh, it doesn't say on there if it...
It's just like that more people notice and report things every 40 years-ish.
Yeah, it makes me wonder because, you know, I have a fascination myself with urban legends.
Yeah.
And urban legends have... a life cycle.
Yeah, they do.
And there's the birth of an urban legend, and then there's the death of an urban legend, and the rebirth of an urban legend.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the legends that I know have been recycled through my parents, grandparents,
yeah,
whatever, and have been passed on to me. So it's interesting that this is happening, like, every 40 years.
Yes, and according to the tale, Dr. Cutler... of Dodgeville was the first to announce seeing the Phantom. He claimed that it appeared on the pole of his wagon as he was riding home one night past the house of the two deceased brothers. Mm. Now, I found, it's actually really cool, it's like a direct quote from a local newspaper at the time detailing a man named John Lewis who died and who put the blame on this ghost. He claimed that some supernatural agency was the cause of his ailments that led to his death. He was a prosperous farmer living in the vicinity of Ridgeway, a man of sober life and undaunted courage. And he cut through the fields one night after helping a neighbor with some butchering.
Very modest.
Yes. Climbing a stone wall, his attention was arrested by the sight of a figure that seemed to have gathered itself together out of the just now tenantless air and stood confronting him in a menacing attitude.
Ooh.
Yeah. Lewis fled, but the ghost stepped across his path and raised his arm. Next morning, a neighbor found Lewis lying inside the wall in a semi-conscious condition. He said he had been hurled in the air as if in a vortex of a cyclone, pounded, crushed into insensibility. He died a few hours after he was carried home, asserting with his dying breath that he had come to his end by a supernatural agency.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a very violent end.
Yeah, like, he hurled through the air as though, like, through the vortex of a cyclone. That's one pissed off motherfucking spirit.
Right?
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, so that was, like, the most validated sighting that I could see. But there was just a lot of people that just every 40 years, they would be walking along the road and something would come up and go boogity. And they're like, oh, it's a Ridgeway ghost. And, some people believe that, like, the phantom departed when the town burned down in 1910. But others believe that now it's still there and it's going to stay there for five ever.
Wow.
But, yes. So now I have, and this is just so cool. I'm just going to read the article that I found. So it's called Some Wisconsin Ghosts. So we're going to skip past the first ghost that it talks about, because that's not the Ridgeway one.
Right.
The other well-authenticated Wisconsin ghost has chosen his haunt in a less urban region and among less cultivated people. Indeed, the scene of his walkings is the most artistically chosen in the midst of a wild and savage landscape. The ghost himself is apparently a remnant of the days when the population of the region was Anglo-Saxon, Virginians and Kentuckians. At any rate, he appears in Ridgeway Township, at the spot where the house of this murdered man long stood, in a rotting heap of blackened boards. The first person to see the ghost, see it a generation after the murder was committed, was one Dr. Cutler of Dodgeville County, next town beyond Ridgeway. One night, as the doctor was driving homeward after a visit to a patient in the country, he was suddenly affrighted at seeing a dark figure seated on the pole between the horses. The reins slipped from his nerveless hands, and the horses dashed away at full speed, the specter riding the pole nothing discommoded by the shaking he was getting. Up a hill, down another, and lo, the specter vanished. The doctor's story found little credence. He was known to love the flowing bowl, which I'm assuming means alcohol.
I suppose.
I was not sure.
I mean, probably not the toilet.
Well, this is...
I mean, I don't know any other bowl.
That is flowing.
Either that or he loved soup.
Yeah. Well, and that his friend said he had taken a drop too much. I just love that sentence. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was known to love the flowing bowl, and his friend said he had taken a drop too much.
He was a wino.
Yes.
A lush.
Very 1902 way of saying that.
A lushy lush in 1902.
It was a dream, a specter of delirium, tremors of mania. But the doctor declared he was sober. He recalled the fact that a year previous, when he really was a little full...
A little... Wow. Sloshed. Uh-huh.
While passing the self-same haunted spot, he had become aware of a dark and silent stranger sitting beside him in the carriage. For a mile, the stranger rode without saying a word, and the doctor had asked no questions of his drunken wits and had considered it a strange experience and nothing more. How much do you have to fucking drink to just be, like, riding your home, and then you look over, and there's someone there, and you're just like, okay, that's happening. And then he just, like, continued driving. He was now convinced that the man beside him and the thing on the end of the pole were one and the same, and that a being not of this world. Whereat the people laughed in the daytime. In the nighttime, they're like checking when they're going home. But not long afterward, the reputation of the doctor received sudden and terrible vindication, as he was himself afterward to vindicate it almost as terribly. John Lewis, so now we're going back to good old Johnny Boy.
Okay.
Father of Evan Lewis, champion Rettler of the United States.
Rettler?
Rettler?
The fuck is a Rettler?
Wrestler?
How do you...
Tiny print.
Okay, all
right. I'm very tired.
Okay, so he was a champion wrestler.
Of the United States. Known to sports everywhere. He was a prosperous farmer living in the vicinity of Ridgeway.
Hmm.
He was returning home one fall evening after assisting a friend in butchering.
Hmm.
And when the night was not dark, and when he drew near the haunted spot, he determined to cut across lots to reach his home. He was approaching the stone wall at the roadside to climb it, when his attention was arrested by the sight of a figure. He knew of no enemy, and highwaymen were unknown in that retired quarter of the state. He decided that someone must be trying to frighten him, so he hailed the figure, and no response being given, he advanced upon it. The figure did not budge, but stood a towering shape of blackness, a gigantic and grisly thing. Some unaccountable awe and the uncanny hugeness of the thing made Lewis decide to avoid a conflict, and, drawing his butcher's knife from his pocket, he started to pass by, when the figure, raising its arms with a forbidding gesture, stepped athwart his path.
I see.
No athwart stepping.
Right.
Obeying a hasty impulse that was more a ghastly and soul-chilling fear than it was anger, Lewis let drive his keen knife. Next morning, a neighbor found Lewis lying inside the wall in a semi-conscious condition. Thus did the death of John Lewis make the first vindication of the reputation of Dr. Cutler, and the scoffing ceased. But a second and third time was the doctor to be vindicated. A dressmaker encountered the ghost, and pursued by it, soon after died of the shock occasioned by the intense fright. At last, Dr. Cutler himself, seeing the ghost for a third time, finally and triumphantly vindicated his word, though at the cost of his own life, for, dying as a result of the fright, he became the third of the victims of the implacable specter of the old military road.
Ooh. Mm. Yeah. Creepy.
Yeah.
So...
I don't want to go there.
Okay. All right, no road trip for that one.
No. Maybe if it was, like, a kind one that, like, did, like, nice shit, but, like, scaring you and then you fucking dying.
Right.
Not my scene.
But it is entirely possible that it is all bullshit.
This is true.
I mean, that's the reason why I want to visit these kinds of places.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not a skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of in between. I don't believe everything I hear, but I do believe some of it. So if I go somewhere and something funky is going on, I want to try to figure out what's happening and try to debunk it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I want to try to validate it. And I think that that's kind of what I want to do here. I want to try to validate it to see if it's actually something that's happening. I mean, especially if it's happening like every 40 years or so and so many people have seen it and had experiences with it. I mean, it makes me, like, want to go there and knock on doors and find out if there are people there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think, like, that what really interests me about folklore is just how, like, its evolution and its, like, cyclical nature, like you were saying earlier. Just how this is from 1902, but sightings have happened up through the 90s. That's not that far in the past.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it would be interesting to talk to people, but I would want the people just to come here, and I'll talk to you here. I don't want to go there. I attract enough weird spirit shit. I don't need to, like, go to where it might be.
Yeah, I suppose.
But see, that's why it's good that there are people like you who want to. like, oh, let us go to where the things are, because otherwise there would be no, like, paranormal investigators and a lot of shit wouldn't get looked at.
That is true.
And then there's me, who is like, leave me alone in a room with some crackers, and I'm sure something will show up eventually.
Coughing it in your room?
Yeah, coughing it in your room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was, right. I know it was a bit short, but I liked it.
No, I think it's valuable to bring these little bits and bobs forward that people maybe haven't heard of before.
And I love Wisconsin, which is funny because when I was in college, I was like, I'm going to graduate, I'm going to leave, I'm never going to come back.
Never again. Sucks. Right.
But no, I genuinely like it. I like the mix of different cultures that we have here and the, like, folklore and...
Right.
Yeah. I was trying to think back to, like, things that I heard growing up, like tales and such, but it's very hard to find any beyond my grandma said it validation of what I have
heard. I mean, actually, one of the main reasons why I originally started this podcast is because one of my friends told me a folk tale from their childhood. They lived in West Bend for a time and grew up there. And it was so compelling a story that I was like, you know, I feel like there should be a podcast that, you know, tells these stories that maybe normally wouldn't get told, you know? And I know that there are a lot of other podcasts out there that do something similar.
Ours is special.
But, I mean, well... Yeah. It's special in its own way.
Yeah. I didn't say if it was a good special or a bad special. Right, just that it is.
Uh-huh.
It's unique.
It is unique. It is that. So, that's... I think that's about it for this week.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys, for listening. If you would like to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales, feel free to do so. Our email is hauntheadscast@gmail.com. I did that without even stuttering that time.
You
amazing.
Did. I'm very proud of you.
I'm learning. You can tweet us at hauntheadscast, and we are on Insta.
At Blood Marmalade.
We hope to connect with you guys soon. Thanks again. Have a great night.
And cool teddy bear.
As always, for me, stay spooky. Why? Fucking like high?
No, my depression is really. Oh, when I saw the movie?
Yeah.
When, so when I saw that movie, I was.
St. James Infirmary. You know, I saw my baby there. Oh, she was stretched out on that long white table.